Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jeff called and wanted to know about when the shift was first put in. Are you there? Did you quit?
I'm listening intently here. My microphone's not working, but I'm listening intently.
I said, Jeff called about the shift?
Yes, he asked who was the first to do a defensive shift. Who was the first manager?
You go back to the 1920s, and you know, everyone talks about the Williams shift, and they think it's Ted Williams. It was actually against a hitter named Cy Williams in the 20s that several teams put the shift in against him as a pull hitter. And then Ted Williams is the one they really did it with the first time. It was Lou Boudreau, the manager of the Cleveland Indians in 1946. He drew it up on a blackboard between games of a doubleheader in July of that year. And, of course, Williams ended up hitting .406 for the season. He hit .406 and .41, but he had a huge year. I think he hit like .340, .350, and the Red Sox won the pennant. And Boudreau said that the shift was more psychological than tactical in his mind because he said Williams still beat it. But, yeah, Cy Williams in the 20s, they shifted him. Then Lou Boudreau was the one that designed it for Ted Williams to try and stop him when the Indians played the Red Sox in 1946. Okay. I hope that helps in terms of giving an answer. So, I mean, there are ways to beat it. I mean, if you recall the 2009 World Series, for example, you know, I can't remember who was at the plate for the Yankees, but Johnny Damon was on first. And Johnny Damon went to steal second and was safe. And, of course, the third baseman's covering second. There was nobody covering third, and Johnny Damon went to third. He stole two bases on one play. Because there was nobody at third base. Third baseman was covering second. Back in like 1970, Willie McCovey, they had a shift on for him. So you know, Willie Mays was on second base. McCovey bunted it down the third base line. Mays came all the way around and scored because there was nobody there. McCovey ended up at second with a double. The ball went about 25 feet. Maybe 30 feet. But I think they need to get it out of the game. I think it's very much now like the... First of all, managers are doing nothing wrong by what they do. Joe Maddon is brilliant with it, does a great job with it, well-researched as to who to do it to and why. This is where sabermetrics comes into play. I think Clint Hurdle with the Pirates does a great job of employing the shifts that he puts in. So it's legal. Nothing wrong. I mean, so they're both, you know, doing everything absolutely within the rules. I'm saying the rule needs to change. Two infielders to the left side of the bag, two infielders to the right side of the bag. That's it. You already have positioning rules in place to begin with. The catcher is not allowed to leave the catcher's box until the ball's released. That's why when you see an intentional walk, they're not just standing outside about 10 feet just waiting for the ball. They've got to, boom, ball release, step out and go get it. That's the rule. John Mayberry or Dominic Brown cannot line up in foul territory. Cody Ashe can't line up in foul territory. It's a balk. So you just can't, you know, there are rules in play as to where people have to be. Pitcher can't throw a pitch from anywhere. They have to throw it from the slab up on the mound. But all, you know, and again, there's the 12-second rule when it comes to pitches with nobody on base. And that's with nobody on base, 12 seconds. Umpires have to stop calling time. They have to send a message right away. They look, you were there to hit. You want to look down to third, you can look down to third. Okay? Don't mind that, but you better get in ready to hit. Do not wander around. I do not want to see you adjusting your, you know, you can adjust your Velcro on your batting glove all you want. But time is in. Strike one, strike two, strike three. I'm sorry, but I was adjusting my call time. I didn't give you time.
Yeah, that's become assumed now in Major League Baseball. They're stepping out before they even get time.
I mean, game's on. Pitcher has the ball in his glove. Game's on. He's got 12 seconds. There's nobody on base. He's got 12 seconds. Throw it. Okay? But I have to. No, you don't have time. Now, if the hitter is looking down to third for a sign, I'm fine. That's fine. That's part of the game. Okay? 1 foot in the box, in the right-handed box, or step 1 foot out of the batter's box to the left-hand side and look down. Okay? 1 foot must be in the box the entire time. Then you get in there ready to hit. I'm saying, okay, second you get back in the box, boom, I'm telling the pitcher you can throw it. If you do all this in spring training, where you can sacrifice games that mean absolutely nothing, even though to Kevin, a 10 and 20 spring training is a disaster.
Well, where's that team right now? Yeah, looking up.
They play better than you thought they would.
Not that much better.
Oh, you're so depressing.
By the way, I do have to give a little bit of props to Ryan Howard, who hit the game-winning home run, finally, the opposite field. It was exciting. Not because it was the game-winning home run and they came back, I think, 4 runs in the inning in the bottom of the ninth, but the fact that he hit it the opposite field.
Mm.
Off of a left-hander, I believe.
Mm. Well, good for you. All right.
Hey, it's the little things. It's the little things at this point.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's good. But yeah, that's the answer to the question. Cy Williams in the 20s and then Ted Williams in 1946. All right. In terms of the first shifts that were put on. So, I think like the center ice trap in the NHL, hand checking in the NBA, this is hurting the game, I think. Now, I don't know what they're saying in the world of sabermetrics as to how much it hurts. I mean, but you can see the production in games are down. And you're seeing, you know, you talk about Ryan Howard, for example. How many times has Ryan Howard hit into the shift?
I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, but again, it's designed to stop that. It's just, and you have to remember, too, that the pitchers are pitching to the shift, too.
Sure they are. That's what, that's the thing that frustrates me as a fan. If you're in the majors, you should be able to hit a ball in different directions, even if it's pitched a certain way. You still should be able to hit a ball at that level in a different direction that they can't put a shift on.
So all of your kids can hit the whole fields?
No. I said in the majors, you should be able to hit the whole fields.
You're coaching these kids. Teach them to hit the all fields.
I do.
And?
I had a leadoff left-hander that hit the ball to left field 3 times in okay, four at-bats.
What did the other 8 guys do?
I don't know. He's the one I've been working with right now. He's the lefty I've been working with right now.
Unreal.
Listen, at that level, I'm happy when they put a bat on the ball, even in senior division. That's good. But by the time you get to the majors, you should be able to hit to all parts of the field. There should be no such thing as a dead pull hitter.
Why not? Why not? I mean, look,
you're in Major League Baseball. You should have learned how to hit the ball to all fields. I mean, in all the time that you've come up from instructional league, college, instructional league, all the way up through AAA, you haven't learned to hit the ball to all fields? I find that hard to believe.
What's the home run part of Citizens Bank Park?
Right field.
Well, I'm sorry. I want Ryan Howard trying to pull the ball as often as possible toward that area, don't you?
If he gets a pitch to hit out of the park. But what I'm saying is I don't want him to have a home run swing to right field on every ball that's pitched. I mean, if they're playing you to right field, hit it to left every now and then, and guess what happens? They don't start playing you to right field, and then all of a sudden you're back to being the hitter that you were a few years ago. And I honestly think the shift is a lot of his issues right now for average.
Okay.
You disagree?
I just think you'd be awfully hard to live with. All right, so you're what you expect of people is just...
I expect, what, $25 million for a year? Is that what it is? That's what I expect in production.
Well, you're not paying them.
But that's where you're wrong. I am paying.
You're not paying.
I am.
Oh, really?
Every time you buy something with a Philadelphia color or logo or image, I'm paying somebody's salary somewhere in that organization.
Okay, so they're not paying Ryan Howard $25 million. How much are you going to get off your T-shirt?
What? That's not the point.
I said, if you're not paying Ryan Howard $25 million, how much of a discount are you expecting on your T-shirt?
All right, well, that's just one. How about the seats that you're paying for to sit in to watch a game?
Okay. I understand.
I'm just saying, I would like my value.
Yeah. To me, a bigger issue is that you just signed a TV contract worth X amount of million, and you need to keep charging me for that seat.
I have that feeling as well.
That's a bigger issue in sports than how much you pay the players. Players are the performers.
Right? I could buy a pack of hot dogs for the price I pay for one.
Okay, that's not the club. Okay,
you're right. It's not.
Okay, that's bidding by concessionaires. Okay, that's an independent contract.
Absolutely.
Does the club get the money? Yes, the club gets the money, but the concessionaire bid X amount. They're trying to get their money back and then make a profit off of it. So I mean, it's not really the ball club going, hey, we just set all these prices for beer around the park. But when it comes to seats in the ballpark, right? You take the Dodgers, for example. What did the Dodgers sign? A $2 billion contract for TV? Some number like that?
It was a nice big number.
$2.4 billion? Okay, then why aren't all the seats in Dodger Stadium $15? Seriously.
No,
I'm not kidding about it.
Let's talk baseball in general. What's the dollar figure that will make you stop going to games?
Well, I mean, look at Yankee Stadium, for example. Yankee Stadium, which is a
perfect example.
Awesome, incredible facility with, you know, sight lines, comfort, the whole deal. And people go, but they don't sell out. And the reason they don't sell out is because the seats are too expensive. Well, the Yankees have the YES Network, for God's sakes. You're telling me that you can't charge, I don't know, pick a number, $20 to $30 for seats in the stadium?
See, I even think $30. If those are seats that are like in the equivalent of a 100 level or field level, that's as much as I'll pay for seats. And some may call me cheap, but I'm sorry, I cannot see the price that they're charging for baseball seats. Now, football, you can almost make an argument for the price of a football ticket because you only get 5 or 6 or 7 home games, depending on the level, of course.
Why? Okay, each football team in the National Football League gets $120 million from their national TV contract.
Well, I'm just comparing it to the amount of games you have available to make money on those seats. That's what I'm comparing.
Kevin, each team gets $120 million from the national TV contract. That doesn't include the money they get from the national radio contract. That doesn't include what they get from their own local radio contract. Okay? I haven't sold a seat yet. I haven't sold a single seat. I've got $130 million between those sources. Okay? I already got it. The salary cap's $120. All my salaries are now taken care of. It's amazing how the salary cap and the TV contract, it's amazing how they're the same number. Okay? I have luxury suites, the whole deal. I don't need to be charging $75 to $100 for a ticket. I don't need to. Parking, the whole nine yards.
Parking should be well secured for the way you pay to park some places.
Right. I understand that.
They should have police there all the time.
Right. And I'm looking at the college level as well. When the Big Ten goes to a $44.5 million per year contract for schools, all right, which doesn't include each individual's radio contract. I mean, Ohio State's $11 million. You know, Penn State's $4 million shy of that at $7 million. Okay. All right. You're garnering just on TV and radio over $50 million a year. This is where it's going to be in 2017. It's not there yet. Right? I'm sorry, but you should drop the prices in the stadium. Now, I know that's sacrilege. I shouldn't be saying that. But I want the stadium filled. I would rather have the stadium filled. Right? People pay enough money, parking and the whole thing. When you're getting that much money from your TV contract, I think you now have to have some common sense as to what you do with the tickets in the stadium.
Are you ready for this? Go ahead.
They're going to get $20 million more in 2017 than they did in 2013. 4 years later, $20 million more. I mean, every school in the Big Ten. Okay? Indiana has Friends and Family Day every Saturday. They're gonna get $44.5 million.
If you take an average of 30,000 in attendance by the average ticket price of Major League Baseball of $28, that's $840,000 in ticket revenue. Now, I realize there's cost for the lights and all that. I know there's an overhead. But in ticket revenue alone in Major League Baseball, it is $840,000 per game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the average ticket price. The average premium ticket price is about $94 a game, or $94 a seat. The average ticket price is $28 a seat. Red Sox charge the most at $52 on an average ticket price at $176.
Yeah.
The Yankees have the most expensive premium seats at $305.
Okay, the Red Sox average what, $52 a ticket?
Just a little over $52 a ticket, and their average premium price is about $177.
Oh, okay.
The Yankees average ticket price is second overall at $52 a ticket and $305 for premium.
Why do I want to buy a $300 premium seat times 82 games or 81 games?
Yeah.
Why do I want to do that? And I want two tickets. I don't want to just go by myself.
Now, if you're an average ticket price ticket holder for a game, it's $52 at Yankee Stadium. If you have a beer, add another $6 to that.
Uh-huh.
So you're at 52, then add another $6. If you want a hot dog, it's going to cost you $3, which actually is a really reasonable price for a hot dog at Yankee Stadium. I don't know how big of a hot dog it is, but it's reasonable.
Yeah, we're up to $61 now.
So you're at $61. Now, it's cost you $35 to park.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're up to $96.
Yep.
$96 on an average game.
Well, $61 if you go with somebody else. Got to add that in.
Right. Well, I'm just saying that's one person. That's one person for a ticket to Yankee Stadium, a beer, and a hot dog, and to park your car.
Yeah, but, you know, you go with somebody else, they're not parking the car. All right, so you got to take the $35 off theirs.
Well, even if you split it by two, you know, you're still paying $70.
Mm-hmm. I know. I go to Fenway, pay $15 at the Prudential Center walkover. I get my tickets for free, I sit down.
The average price to park in the in Major League Baseball is $15.
That's okay. I can live with that.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. Yankee Stadium, it's $35 to park. That is the highest. And the lowest looks like it's probably Baltimore at $8. But that's because, you know, they have a lot of the parking's like strewn all over the place. Padres are the $8 too.
Well, so but Boston has no parking lot. I mean, the Red Sox, Fenway technically has a parking lot. There is actually one. You can't see it. It has a limited number of spaces, and I parked there before. It's underneath the center field seats. Okay? It's kind of a dark, dingy place. But at Fenway, you have to park in gas stations. And I mean, there's no Fenway Park parking lot. I mean, you go to Citizens Bank Park or the Link. You know, the South Philly Sports Complex is unbelievable in that regard. I mean, really. I mean, you're parked all. You know, you're parked close enough if you go to South Philly, right?
I did a quick little thing here. If you see about 25 games a year, it's going to cost you about $2,000. For base to what, and that's one person. That's an average. Now let's look at an NFL game. The average NFL ticket price is $82. The price of the soft drink or the price of a beer is $7. Price of a hot dog is $5, and the average price of parking is $30.
Right. Well, I look at this whole thing when I see the amount of TV money coming in. I mean, you can't tell me that you can't roll back ticket prices unless you've mismanaged it.
See,
they're getting more money from television today than they ever dreamed they were going to get.
But you could see an entire home season of your favorite NFL team, Steve, and you'd pay the same amount to see 25 baseball games, though. That's what I don't understand.
All right. All right. We'll talk more about this. Final half hour coming up. News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. Today's game, today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf. So, Kevin told me he will not pay more than $5 to go to a game.
Not anymore, no.
And nor will he wear an Iron Pig's hat.
No, I mean, I don't know. I never liked that nickname. I mean,
it's
different. I understand the iron part of it with being Allentown and Lehigh Valley. I get that. And I guess the agriculture side of that area, too, with the pigs. All right, I get that, I guess.
Well, you should get a bacon hat.
Why?
I think it screams you.
I have been known to wear an I-beam during Steeler games.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Lehigh Valley has those bacon hats.
I haven't seen the bacon hat.
Come on, man.
No, I thought you were kidding. I didn't realize you were serious.
This is you. This scream. You know, the Kevin Herr that people hear every day. You know,
I got to look that up.
Look it up. They have a hat with a strip of bacon on it.
Yeah, I see that now. They have one with a strip of bacon across the front, and then there's another one. There's another version of it that has two bacon and an X. No, sorry.
It's you. It screams you. No. In fact, the young players that you coach now,
right?
But then have to spend July and August in therapy. I would love it if you showed up with a bacon hat.
They would, yes. They would enjoy that. You're right about that.
In fact, the whole league would.
I don't know about that.
Oh, no, you'd be a hit. You're already a target in the league to begin with. Well, you don't think so?
I don't know where you're going with that, and I'm not sure I want to go along for the ride.
You're already a target in the league. You're the big name, the star.
Really? I don't think so.
Oh, I do. Well, you think those two young umpires last night?
Yeah, there we go. That's where you were going. I knew you were headed some direction there.
They baited you into coming out like the other manager. Like, there he goes again.
I've never seen the bacon hat before, and I will not wear one, thank you.
How much is the bacon hat? $24?
How much is the bacon hat? Let's see. $30.
$30.
Yeah, that's their alternate two hat.
Perfect.
No. No, it's not.
Hey, no. Yeah. Look, if there's any person on the face of the earth that should wear the bacon hat, it's you. I just think it screams you. And people who know you, I mean, Sean Carey right now, who should be listening to his own show, is listening to this show, okay, is laughing his backside off right now because he knows it's you.
I'll take an LV one. You know, the one of the LV ones, I'm fine with that road cap.
No. That's just, that stands for Lehigh Valley. It's too standard.
Right.
Too standard, okay? The bacon hat makes a statement.
See, and I also believe that all your minor league teams should have the same nickname as the parent club, so I don't get confused.
No, you know what? I used to think that. I don't think that anymore. I think it's really, really good for the team to have its own identity. And I think that's really important.
Well, like, here's an example. The Reading Phillies have the name Phillies, but they don't have a P on their hat. It's actually an R with a steam engine in their logo.
Yeah, for Reading.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they still have the same nickname as the parent club, but then they have their own identity with the logo.
Well, Philadelphia, okay, let's take the Phillies as an example. They have kept their double-A team in Reading, and they've been in Reading for how long? I mean, how many decades?
Oh, as long as I can literally remember being a Phillies fan, they were in Reading.
Right, but the AAA team was in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre.
No, they were in Maine for a while. Then they were in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre. Yeah.
Right. Okay. The Williamsport Crosscutters are the Phillies now, but before they were the Batavia Muckdogs.
Right.
Okay. So the point I'm making with that is affiliations change, and I think it's important that the local club has its own identity, and I think for ticket sales and so forth, it can't be, it's more than let's go watch the Phillies prospects in Williamsport. It has to be, hey, let's go watch the Crosscutters play.
Okay. Yeah, I know where you're coming from there.
I think it has to be that, and there's a long term, because I mean the Crosscutters were the Pirates.
Yes.
Before, I mean, yes, how many different affiliations have they had?
I can think of three right off the top of my head.
The Indians have been there. The Cubs have been there. The Pirates have been there. The Phillies are there now. And I think I've just scratched the surface of about the number of different affiliations that have been in Williamsport and different leagues that they've been in. I mean, you have some stability with certain places. Pawtucket has been the Red Sox for forever. Portland now for a long time is the double-A team. Lowell is the single-A team. Because, I mean, more and more teams are doing a great job of keeping their affiliations around where the primary club is. Right? For the most part. Now, I'm here at State College, and I'm doing St. Louis Cardinal affiliate games, so it doesn't quite fit there. But for the most part, you know, the Trenton, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, they're the Yankees. Staten Island is the single-A team. The Cyclones are the single-A team. Binghamton for the Mets. You know. More and more teams are keeping their affiliates in the general neighborhood. I think it's good for marketing. I've talked before about a friend of mine with the San Diego Padres. They were talking about moving their affiliate out of Portland and putting a AAA affiliate within about 50 or 60 miles of San Diego. And he said, "Hey, I'd like your opinion about this because you're a minor league baseball." And you know, I talked to him about the domino effect of seeing said prospect there. The idea of like, hey, you know, great, we had him here. Let's go down to Petco and watch him play. I said, you can also, for your staff, keep track of your prospects closely because it's an easy trip and you can make frequent trips. I said, and in the end, you're not flying all over the place to track them down and so forth. You can just, you know, you can drive the 50 or 60 miles to be there and see them. I said, also, if you need to recall somebody and you're at home, for example, they can be there, you know, an hour after you call them up because you need them at that point. If you're on the road, it's a different proposition. You know, so I gave them a whole list of things that were all positives to it. I said, they're not going to siphon away fans from you. They're 50 or 60 miles away.
And by the way, somebody did just send me a message to correct me that in 2013, Reading actually became the Fightin' Phils.
Right. You said that.
Well, no, I had them as the Reading Phillies because that's the way I remember them from so many years. And 67, I think, was the first year for the Reading Phillies.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so they changed.
They've changed their nickname, yep.
It's more of an identification. Are they the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders?
They're the Rail Riders now. They were the Red Barons originally, then they changed to the Yankees when the Yankees affiliation came in, and now they're the Rail Riders because they wanted to have. They wanted to have their own logo affiliation or their own logo and affiliation with the cities.
And again, it goes to the town itself, as far as I'm concerned. I think it gives the town an identity, for example. It becomes the town's club. You're not just going there to see the Yankees. You're not just going there to see the Phillies. you're going to see Reading baseball, and it happens to be Phillies prospects, which makes it more intriguing for you. You're in State College. You're going to the ballpark for the State College Spikes experience. It just turns out the supplier of talent is the St. Louis Cardinals.
Now, Binghamton's still the Mets.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that, and I understand that. That's fine. I'm trying to think in the New York Penn League, Staten Island Yankees. But I think they're the only ones in the league that have the affiliation and the nickname. No, Connecticut Tigers, the Detroit Tigers team. So it's two out of 14. But see, everybody changes. Auburn for years had been the Toronto Blue Jays. Now Auburn is the Washington Nationals. Well, they kept the name Auburn Double Days. Batavia has gone from the Phillies to the Cardinals to the Marlins. But they've never changed. They're still the Batavia Muck Dogs. Jamestown has gone from the Marlins to the Pirates. Mahoning Valley's been Cleveland the entire time. Staten Island, Brooklyn have been the Yankees, Mets the entire time. Of course, State College has gone from Cardinals to Pirates back to Cardinals. See, and I think that's why by identifying it as your team, it's an easier market for you. That you're marketing your hometown team and that you're State College Spikes fans and not trying to market it toward, hey, you know, you're a Pirate fan. Because not everybody here is a Pirate fan. Now, believe me, I mean, the number of Cardinal fans here is pretty small. I mean, except for Matt Adams' family in Phillipsburg. You know, really.
Well, but that has more to do with the fact that the Cardinals are in St. Louis and not the fact that, you know, nobody's right, a Cardinals fan around here. You know, proximity is the issue there, I think.
Right, but I'm saying that's why by keeping it the State College Spikes and not saying they're the State College Cardinals or they're the State College Pirates or whatever, that way you keep the identity of the club. Where you're going to see 38 times State College baseball, 38 times you're going to Williamsport baseball. I mean, like I said, in Williamsport, it's been the Indians, the Cubs, the Pirates. Now it's the Phillies. I think the Red Sox were actually in there at one point way back when. But it's still, Williamsport Crosscutters baseball.
Well, maybe it doesn't mean as much to fans, to avid fans of that, of those minor league teams, that they have an association with the parent club as much as it does me, just because of my want, my need to know.
Well, I understand that. I mean, let's take golf, for example. It used to be that the sponsor name of the tournament went with the name of the town, where you knew it was the Verizon Greater Milwaukee Open. Well, now it's just called the Verizon Open, and you're like, okay, where's
that being played?
Right, which happens all the time. That happens all the time where you don't know.
Racing's a perfect example. Now, I know you're going to laugh at this, but you and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. You had mentioned the Milwaukee race, which used to be the Milwaukee Indy Fest. Well, that's now something totally different and has no affiliation with the name Milwaukee now. So it's a little confusing because it has nothing to do with the area it's in. It has the sponsor name involved in it now.
Right. And see, that's... I don't think areas... You can't sacrifice your identity. Part of having the event in your area or the team in your area is identifying that it's your area. That's why, for example, I don't blame the city of Anaheim for getting mad that they're the Los Angeles Angels. They're 40 miles away from Los Angeles. Okay, you're playing in Anaheim. What's wrong with calling them Anaheim? I don't get that. Now, obviously, the Giants and Jets both play in New Jersey across the river. They're still called New York. Okay. I can see it there.
Yeah, well, one time, but, weren't they discussing making them making the Jets New Jersey?
That I don't know.
I remembered a conversation like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You may very well be right. I just don't know.
I don't think it ever, you know, obviously it didn't happen. I don't know how many legs it had to get going, but
right. Well, but now you have in almost all these places now where the teams are actually playing in the cities. I think, for example, the Marlins made a great move. I mean, they may have made a lot of great moves, but changing it from the Florida Marlins to the Miami Marlins. I think that was smart. I think that's good. I think there's a movement afloat that when the Golden State Warriors open their new arena in San Francisco, they're going to change back to being the San Francisco Warriors. And I think it's good for the identity of the area. I mean, look, the Bay Area's hockey team are the Sharks. Well, they're called the San Jose Sharks because guess what? They play in San Jose. What's wrong with being in San Jose? What's wrong with saying you're the Anaheim Angels? I don't understand where in marketing, like, I would love to know if the Angels got any more fans from Los Angeles. My goodness, we have an American League team. Let's go.
I didn't realize they were there.
They've been there since 1961. You didn't know it?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they originally were the Los Angeles Angels. When they played at Wrigley Field in Los Angeles. And then they moved out to Anaheim, and then they were called the California Angels. And they stayed that way for a long time. But then for a period of time, in fact, when they won the World Series, they were known as the Anaheim Angels. I don't understand why you can't... What's wrong with... Anaheim's a city of 300,000 people. I mean, it's you know, it's not Punxsutawney.
They support the Mighty Ducks pretty well.
Right, I'm saying though, but they're in Anaheim. I would like to know in market research if they have garnered any more fans by changing the name of the team. Oh my goodness, we're the Los Angeles Angels. Let's go. I mean, considering Dodger attendance has never recovered from the 1994 strike, something tells me they're getting no extra fans from the, you know, you're not going to travel another 35, 40 miles because you're mad at the Dodgers. I mean, I just see, I mean, now obviously there's some teams that don't play in the city, like the Dallas Cowboys play in Arlington, the Texas Rangers play in Arlington. All right. Okay, I see that. Most teams, though, are playing in the city now. And I don't understand why, you know, and so I think identity means something. And you're talking about minor league baseball. I know you want to know the affiliation, and that I completely understand that. But I also think that the team has to identify with its area and be the team of its area. Because when you take the Reading Fightin' Phils, for example, they've been with the Phillies organization now for almost 50 years. Okay. But not every minor league affiliate's like that. I mean, they change up. And because they change up, I think you have to have your own marketing strategy in place for the identity of your team and not just who you're hooked up with. Just my opinion. I just think from a marketing point of view, it's your team. And you should take pride in your area with your team and your logo and your nickname and everything that goes with it. Just a thought. Yeah, you have a game tonight?
No.
Whew, what a relief for the umpires in the league.
But we have a break before we wrap things up for the day.
Whew, man. I'll tell you right now, I bet those two kids went home last night. So you wouldn't believe how we got railed out by this guy. A News Radio 1070 WKOK. Would you buy a Super Bowl ring?
Depends on how much it is.
Would you consider it?
Depends on how much it is.
How about Tom Maddie's playbook wristband?
How much? It's all with price with me. I don't know.
Well, what piece of memorabilia would intrigue you just before price?
Ticket to the biathlon at a Salt Lake Olympics. Oh, wait, I already have one of those.